The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Go Wild is a free social community created for and by hunters. This means that unlike mainstream social media, your trophy pictures won't be censored. They're encouraged. As you spend time on Go Wild, you will earn awesome rewards such as gift cards, free swag, and big discounts on brands like Garmin and Vortex. You will even earn $10 just for signing up. Visit downloadgowild.com and sign up today.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast. I'm your host, Mitchell Shirk, and this is our first episode launch on a Wednesday. Mr. Bossman Dan Johnson told me that we were making the switch from launching on Fridays to launching on Wednesdays. There's little changes in the network going on, and he said it was to my benefit. So that gives you guys an extra day, extra 2 weekdays for you to download my episodes and listen to them that week. So we'll go with that, but all good. So we are making that transition, but in the heart of summer, I tell you what, it doesn't take me long to get my mind off of turkeys and back onto deer. So just this past week in my travels for work, I'm an agronomist. I've said this a million times. I'm an agronomist, and this time of year, I cover a lot of farms, a lot of ground, and a lot of time I'm on four-wheelers just going up farm lanes, zipping through fields to check crops, you know, bounce from one field to the next, hop over a tree line, go to the next farm. And in the past week, I've bumped two really good bucks, and I've actually seen a lot of deer, but two of them that were substantial, like, you know, they ran out with another buck that was smaller than them, and you could tell the difference that, you know, the smaller of the two deer was probably your standard 2.5-year-old deer, you know, just my estimation, but the larger of the two had significantly longer body, it was taller, it had more defined hams, more defined chest, and rack was quite impressive out to its ears. And it, like I said, didn't take me long at all to be off the turkey kick and back onto the deer kick. You know, this has been a year like no other with this drought. It's made the time I spend in the field and the demand by clients a little bit higher than normal. And that's fine. It's just, it's a new challenge. But with that challenge on top of, you know, the household stuff we got going on, I'm in the middle of a bunch of projects. I've done absolutely zero hunting prep so far, almost zero hunting prep. You know, normally I helped this time by now. Normally I help with food plots. I've done some chainsaw work, trail cutting, tree stand cleanup, stuff like that. I'm usually helping, especially at the main place that I hunt. And here it is, it's June, and I've done none of that. And it's actually, it's quite frustrating. It's depressing a little bit if I start to think about it too much. But, you know, it's one of those things I got to accept it. And I have to accept the fact that I might reap what I sow this year. And I've made the decision to, just for my own personal self, that if I can't, if I don't get some of these house projects wrapped up in the summertime and can get some time to devote to the main place that I've hunted most of my life, if I can't get some off-season time, then I'm probably not going to spend very much time hunting there, just because it just does not feel right for me to go and hunt, take time off of work and force time in the fall to hunt when I haven't done any prep work on a property that's very good. And I don't want to take anymore. I mean, I'll be the first to admit that, you know, in my life I've been so fortunate and so many blessings with family and friends and loved ones and hunting opportunities. And I've done a really, really good job of taking a lot. And, you know, if anybody can relate to me, you can kind of understand my mentality. So I really want to hunt there. It's my favorite place in the world to hunt. But if I can't devote some time to off-season stuff, probably won't spend as much in-season time there. And that's okay. Seasons come and seasons go. And one season that's kind of resurfaced for me, or I guess came to heads with here, is the fact that, you know, I'm young. Don't get me wrong. I'm 29 years old. Next year I'll break 30. But I'm young. I feel good. But I definitely noticed in my later 20s that I was just getting lazy. I was getting into a groove, a routine of just day-to-day work. And, you know, now father, you know, husband, household, all those things that just consume your time. And really wasn't taking good care of myself. And I would say it wasn't last season, but the season before, 2021, was probably my roughest season for a couple reasons. Struggled to connect, struggled with my shooting in season. But I also noticed for the first time like a significant lag physically in the mountains. Like I would get out of breath quicker. I had more cramps after I was done hunting in my legs from walking. It was taking me longer to go places. And I got to the heaviest weight that I'd ever been in my life, and it just wasn't a really good place. And, you know, last year I said, you know, I can't take this anymore. And I did a kind of a program. I did lose a bunch of weight and it helped, but what I did was not very sustainable. And I'm coming at this because I want to be able to enjoy the thing I love the most, especially now that I have a little less time than I used to devote to it. So the time that I get, I want to maximize it, and I want to enjoy it. And I want to be the person that, you know, I have it in my mind that I am going where I have to go for game, and I'm not going to complain, whine, or gripe, or be held up by my own physical shortcomings to go to that location. I want to enjoy my hunt where I've got to go game and explore. I love to explore, and I don't want to deter that. And the other motivation I have, too, is, you know, I've got two boys, a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, and it occurred to me at one point that there is a very good chance that these two are going to be knuckleheads like their dad is, or once was, or is, or whatever you want to say. But when they, you know, if my oldest, Lucas, if he's 3, so in another 15 years, when he's 18 years old coming out of high school, that's about the time you think you're 10-foot tall and bulletproof, I still want to make sure that he knows that he's not going to be able to kick his dad's rear end. And I want to make sure that my boys can't whoop up on their old man, that they know who the boss is. So those are my two motivations. So with that, here recently, I made a connection with somebody, and he's our guest of our show this week. His name is Chris Heskett. Chris is, you know, a Pennsylvania guy, hunter, father, husband, And he's a nutritionist and also a health coach. And I'm actually at the moment, he's doing a 21-day challenge, peak weight, peak fat loss challenge, kind of like a jump start of his program, kind of gets you used to some of the things he does, but it's a challenge, it's an opportunity to learn stuff, and I decided I was going to do it. I mean, I had him on the show, and we started talking about it. I was like, you know what, that sounds like a great thing for me to just kind of change my groove up a little bit and do something that's healthy and good for me and maybe learn some good habits along the way. But the sole motivation for me is I've been following Chris on Instagram, seeing the things he's been putting out for not just hunters, but for people in general that just want to live healthier lifestyles. And I think it's one thing that we don't talk about enough. And I can tell you right now, for the majority of my life, I've neglected greatly because I didn't value it that much. But as time goes on, I'm starting to see that when I have physical health maximized, everything else, my social health, my mental health, all of that just falls into place so much nicer. It's so much better. And I enjoy my day-to-day life better, and that turns into hunting. Like I said, everything I do at the end of the day, I'm thinking about how does this make me a better hunter and everything else, even though there's a lot bigger, better, more important things than that, but that's always been my mentality. So that was the motivation, and we talk about just kind of getting out of the funk, the day-to-day stuff that you might have, and what we can do right now in the off season to prepare if you're experiencing any of the things that I experienced in the past 2 years. So we talk about, you know, changing day-to-day lifestyles. What are some things that we can do to build muscle groups or endurance, to hike mountains, to climb trees, to set tree stands, to be more agile, things like that. And it's all revolving around that. We talk a little bit about food and wild game and utilizing it in, you know, through the lens of how Chris does with his lifestyle and what he enjoys out of that. And, you know, we all know that wild game is, you know, high quality for as far as nutrition goes. So this is a great episode for just trying to get us mentally motivated to be on top of things physically and keeping up with our physical health. So real quick, we're going to get a word from our partners here, and we're going to first give a shout out to Radix Hunting. Guys, if you are ready for off-season prep work, you need to check Radix Hunting out. Guys, they're Gen 600 standard cameras, fantastic image quality, excellent trigger speed response. Really, really handy use camera. They also have their M-Core cell cameras, which, in my opinion, it's hard to beat M-Core. There's a lot of comparable cameras out there, but as far as price and what you get, it's a hard camera to beat. It's again, high quality, great image quality, great trigger response, great coverage between AT&T, Verizon, and it's a tool that is well used. I'm looking forward to running mine on a couple of my places I hunt farther away. And it's a company that I would invest in. They have a lot of trail camera accessories to check out. Check out their stick and pick stuff from trail cameras, mounts, and adapters and stuff like that. Radix Hunting. And also I want to give our mention to Huntworth. Guys, if you're looking to upgrade your clothing, if you want something that's more comfortable, if you want something that keeps you warm, keeps you dry, keeps you from the wind, all the Elkins line that I ran this year in turkey season did that and more. I was truly, truly just blown away. First of all, the price was not going to break the bank. It's got versatility throughout a long duration of the season. But it did. It kept me so warm, and it was comfortable. Like, I've been somebody that I never realized how important comfortable clothing was to me when I hunted. I always had cheap stuff. I always, mix and match the wrong size, things like that. You know, belt pants were a little bit big, cinch my belt down a little bit tighter and just live with it. I felt like an athlete when I was walking in the woods. It felt It just felt good. And to me, now I don't want to go into woods without feeling like that, without feeling my mobility, having quiet clothing, and having a great camo pattern like I do with the Disruption pattern. So guys, check out Huntworth. I think it's a company that if you're looking to swap stuff out and get that upgrade, check out Huntworth. And with that, let's get to this episode. So, hey, joining me tonight, I have got another podcast host, a little bit different type of podcast, but we got some similar interests. I have Chris Heskett on the line with us this evening. Chris, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you, Mitchell, for inviting me.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have been on a constant battle for the past lifetime of trying to make sure that I'm in physical, mental preparation for everything that I do. I was going through this weird bout for a long time, and I think it was just the phases of life. I went through school and sports, and I was really in the best shape of my life, and then I went into careers and getting married and just learning how to maneuver my life with the changes in pace, and then having kids, and it just got so chaotic. And I never ever would have thought those life changes would have such an impact to my hunting, and they have. And making those right changes is good. So I know that you are a fitness nutrition coach, and you also love hunting. So, Chris, again, thank you for coming on, and I'd love you to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, so I am a online fitness and nutrition coach. I was an in-person personal trainer for about 9 years before eventually my wife and I had our first daughter. She's about to turn 2 in September, so after that being a personal trainer and having kids does not go hand in hand with the schedule. So, I transitioned to online coaching. But the big focus has been for my clients, I like working with people who enjoy the outdoors. And part of that is hunting. So I've kind of included my, hobby of hunting into coaching. And you'll see that in a lot of my content, especially as we get closer to hunting season here when we're recording this, you'll start to see more archery content and stuff as I start to ramp up. But I didn't actually start out hunting. So a lot of guys grow up hunting. That was not me. I grew up around hunters in Gettysburg, but did not hunt. My dad didn't hunt. Nobody hunted. My wife's family, huge hunters. Her granddad actually had the state black bear record for a while.
Wow.
The thing is, they didn't have back then when he got it, I forget the date, but they didn't have a stand big enough for it. So it's actually smaller, but it's in my uncle-in-law's. Well, as soon as you open up his room, it's there, just right over you. It's massive. I'm like, that thing is smaller than it's supposed to be? Holy crap. But so I didn't get into it until so my wife, she battles anemia and low B12. So that's not a problem if you can eat red meat, but a couple of years ago, she developed an allergy to beef. And so you need iron and B12. Beef is a great source. She also has, GI issues. So she had an eating disorder when, before we met, and, that messed up her digestive system. So she couldn't take iron supplements. So we tried out venison and she loves it. Awesome. So that's kind of how I got into hunting, I guess about 4 years ago was, okay, well, we can't afford to buy bison every single week. We need red meat for my wife to be healthy. So I guess I'm going to go out and start hunting and provide for my wife. So that's literally I'm only going to do deer hunting. That's all I'm going to do. And got a doe the first year, last day of rifle season in the last hour, the entire season, nothing. As last chance, finally had an opportunity. And immediately I'm like, yep, I'm addicted to this. This is my new personality now.
So I have to say, Chris, that is the absolute coolest way I've ever heard somebody getting into hunting, because I've done this show. I'm closing in on 100 episodes this year, so I've had a bunch of interviews, and before that, and all the people I meet and stuff with hunting, it's always about your intro of somehow you were introduced to it by a family member or a friend or something like that, and it was the thrill of that. And that wasn't even in the first part of it. You learned why we love it so much. I mean,
yep.
that almost addiction, or that connection you have as a hunter, you learned that after the fact, and that's so cool.
Thank you. Yeah, it's, you know, I still have that, like, newbie, so I know, like, as we go through things, it's me with fitness, like, generally, like, you're, like, I'm blanking on the word, but, like, you're not as, like, fired up about it, like, after, like, a decade or two decades. Like, I have that now, so it's like guys like my age who've been hunting for like two decades now, like I'm 33, they're like, oh yeah, I like hunting, but it's, for a lot of them, it's starting to die down, where I'm like, no, well, like I am like all in on this thing, like it come like, you know, August, it's all I'm thinking about. So, like, hunting, when can I get outside, what, how am I going to be, when can I get like the last couple things in with my bow, when do I dial in my rifle, like it is full on, just like, you know, for a lot of guys back when they were in their teens.
Well, this conversation is going to start to take a turn I didn't expect. So I have to ask this next question. So if your wife really enjoys venison and it's an important part of her diet, tell me a little bit about the husband-wife relationship as you've become more in depth with your interest in hunting and the time spent away, especially now as a dad too.
Well, so we'll tag team for hunting. So she's gotten into hunting. She's awesome. With me. So she's a year or so behind, but she hasn't done as much just because she was finishing up nursing school. Then she got pregnant. She's currently pregnant with number two. So it's like we've gone through like a couple seasons. She's only gotten out a couple times. But we basically, after that first year, like the second season, I harvested four deer. And that was like our red meat for the year. So that's kind of like, we view it not like as like, oh, I'm going off on like a guy's weekend, more like this is how we're going to eat. So either I have to go and get the red meat, or we are not going to have red meat. And my wife absolutely loves it. And now with my daughter, we just had our last roast. She destroyed it. Like, my daughter absolutely annihilates venison. She'll eat almost as much as I do. Like, how is this kid still hungry? But so it's just one of those things, like, we need to have it. So it's more like grocery shopping almost. I hate to put it that way, but it's essential for us. So we view it that way. Like, this needs to happen. These are the days I'm going to go hunt, for the best chance. So we just talk about it that way rather than like, oh, going off on guys' weekend or going off on girls' weekend. It's an essential component in the fall that we need to do for our family.
And that is just so pure, because to be honest with you, and I'm guilty of this as much as anybody, that's usually not the case in most cases. And I've had this conversation on my show with, you know, friends and family off the show. You know, the overwhelming guilt, or the juggling and struggling that I have as a father, as a husband, as a friend, as an employee, all those stuff, like, it just weighs on you, and realizing the importance of things in life. But, you know, I'm typically putting hunting up there, not necessarily as the value in the venison that comes back to my table. While that's greatly appreciated and I utilize as much as possible, I'd be the first to say I'd be lying if I said that was the first of, you know, first primary reason that I'm doing it. And I think a lot of people would kid themselves to be to say that's the case. So, you know, I really like that and appreciate that. I think it brings into, like, just the purity of what's important in hunting in the first place. But
yeah.
Now I kind of want to circle back too. So you're a physical fitness coach, nutritionist. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about getting into that. Like, how, what was that path for you in this very interesting field?
So I started, let's see, I didn't do any sports really growing up, until I did cross country when I was 14, freshman in high school. And then back then, all the girls wanted like guys to be jacked. So I was a skinny cross country runner, and I figured, and super introverted too. Like, no self confidence, super introverted back then. So I was like, cool. So girls like guys with muscles, build muscle, get girls. Does not work that way, by the way, but that was my teenage brain thinking, hey, we can do this. But I just fell in love with the process of training, and then I would get other people coming up, never girls, usually other guys. Any guy who's been lifting knows, like, it's always like other guys asking, like, what's your split, bro? So I would be helping them with either their diet or building a workout routine. So that just became something I liked. And I've always been super nerdy into the sciences and stuff. So it's just like, hey, there's this exercise science degree offered by colleges. I'm going to go and do that. Had no idea I was going to get into training. My big thing was I just wanted to stay out of hospitals. I wanted to help people before they got into the hospital, like keep people from getting in there. So as we're going through, I'm like, oh, we can either go strength conditioning, which that was my internship at Bucknell, or we can go like personal training. It's like strength conditioning, you work like 12 to 15 hour days and make 30 grand a year, or you can go personal training, maybe do the same, but potentially make way more money. Okay, we're going to go that route. So that's kind of how I got into it. I liked it for myself. I liked helping other people. I liked the science. And then it just naturally, like, that was the best course of action for me.
Very cool. So dive a little bit more into, like, the motivation for it. Like, you know, you're interested in it, but, like, is there something about it that motivates you in this? Because, I mean, it seems like for the overwhelming majority of Americans that nutrition, physical fitness, overall health, like, I just don't put it as a priority in my life for whatever reason. So tell me a little bit about your mindset and philosophy in regards to that.
So when it comes to like being motivated to do something, you have to have like a really good goal. I know it kind of sounds woo-woo, but it needs to be super clear cut, and it needs to be something beyond like, I just want to get in shape. Like, what does in shape mm-hmm. mean? I just want to lose a little bit of weight. Like, that motivates nobody for more than 6 weeks. So what's like the driving factor for you? Like, why do you want to lose that weight? Why do you want to get in shape? What's the thing that's driving you to do those things? Is it, hey, I'm going backcountry elk hunting and I live in Pennsylvania and I'm going to be in Colorado at, you know, 10,000 plus feet of elevation. I need to be in shape for that. I had a client who does just that. So it's like, yeah, that's going to be a motivator because that can be the deciding factor of whether you harvest an elk or not for that archery hunt. Or it might be like, hey, like I realize my health is declining and I want to be there to see like my grandkids graduate college. Like, unless I start putting in the work now, I'm never going to see that. So it can be a multitude of factors. I always, for a lot of my clients, it's coming back to family and like, hey, like I started working out and now I can do all these things with my kids. I can get down on the floor. I can play with them. I can go out in the backyard and do things and I'm not tired. So that's a big thing that a lot of clients get after they start by losing weight, start by working out, the basic stuff, but then they realize, oh, this is why we do this thing.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I can definitely relate to that. You know, I, again, coming out of, you know, a new phase of life, you know, a couple, probably 2-3 seasons ago, you know, I was kind of just living life, you know, fly by the seat of my pants. And it was like I said, 2 or 3 seasons ago, I really noticed that, you know, my fall hunting trips that I would take typically was upstate Pennsylvania, going to deer camp, bear camp, running around mountains for a few days. It was the first time that I ever noticed, like, I am not able to have the stamina and go the places I want to go as quick as I want to go, like I did a few years ago. And it really bugged me. It really got to a point where I was like, the thing I love and enjoy the most is getting harder to do, and I don't want that to happen. And another motivating thing I have, too, so I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, both boys, you know, happy father. And it occurred to me not that long ago that, you know, I've got 2 boys. Lord knows they're probably going to be headstrong like their dad and think they're real big, tough stuff. And in 18 years, they're probably thinking they're going to be able to kick dad's rear end. And I want to make sure that they know that that's not possible while they're living under my roof. So, you know, a couple of motivating factors and stuff. But, you know, really the thing that I want to do is, you know, I've hunted with so many people over the years where you start, maybe you drive in the top of a ridge on a big track of public land, right? And you look down this drainage across a hollow and say, hey, we want to climb down here. We want to get into this bottom and we're going to make a push across this side hill for bear and such. And I'd be with guys that go, you're going to go all the way down there for that? Like, why? Like, I don't want to shoot something down there. Then I got to get it out. And, like, that is something that never crosses my mind because that's where I want to be. That's where I enjoy it. I just want it to be something that I'm sustainable to do, and it's easier to do. And I think there's a lot of hunters out there that are probably in that mindset. The but part of that is life gets in the way, and life can get really, really hard to make the time valuable. So I'm sure you can relate to that. I mean, when you get clients that might have something similar of that nature, you know, maybe they're somewhere in that demographic of 25 to 45, have an interest in hunting or some kind of personal hobby of such, but you got, you know, the busyness of work and family and things like that that really make it up. How do you see, like, time management as, I guess, so to speak, how do you work with clients in a sense of time management and prioritizing what really needs to be done in order to achieve those goals?
So a couple routes we can go here. So first of all, most people think we have, like, to be in shape, we have to be a Cameron Haynes and run like a mile, like a marathon every single day, plus work out. So the minimum we need to do is 2 days a week of some sort of exercise. So if you can do 2 days a week for 30 minutes, that's 1 hour out of your week that you just have to find to start seeing fitness goals. Obviously, it's not going to give, you're not going to become like a fitness model. You're not going to be in amazing shape to where you can run like 10Ks effortlessly. That's not going to happen. But you're going to build muscle, maintain your strength, maintain a good level of fitness with just two times a week, 30 minutes. That's it. So it's setting an expectation of, hey, we don't have to do that much. Where can we find this time? Or maybe it's like three times a week. Like, we have a few clients, three times a week, 15 minutes. We have clients who, so I have a lot of clients who are in pharmaceuticals right now. So corporate world, they're traveling for business. It's like 15 minute workouts. That's all we're going to do. For hunters, one of the best workouts you can do is rucking. So if you're not familiar with that term, it's just weighted walking. Like, it's what the military does. So you just throw like a weight vest on, or you can throw like books or weights into a backpack. Just make sure the backpack can handle it. But you can do that. Like, if you walk a dog every single day, just throw the weight vest on when you go walk the dog. So if you're walking your dog 2 miles a day, cool. Now you just create a 2 mile workout for yourself while you just walk your dog. So you can work it in different ways like that, where maybe it's not the traditional, like, go to gym, work out for 1 hour, come home. That's been an hour and a half out of your day because you need to gym and stuff, but you can still get in shape that way. The other thing we do is, let's look at how much time you're actually wasting. Like, pull up your phone. There's a setting in there that shows you, like, what your screen time is. How much screen time are you spending on social media? How much screen time are you spending on video games? How much TV are you watching? Are those things actually helping you towards your goal? And with a lot of those things, you can watch Netflix and be on the treadmill and watch on that. You can do both. You can, you know, walk at an incline with the weight vest on, get a good workout in that way. So it's first, let's take a look at your schedule, see where it fits in, and then set a realistic expectation for how many days a week you can get to it. So the way I phrase it to my clients when they come on, like, how many days, like, think of your craziest week. How many days can you commit to working out on those weeks? And it'll be like two or three generally. Cool. That's the expectation. Anything above that, that's like extra credit. So I know you want to work out 5 days a week. You did, like, you get a check that you did a good week if you get two or three days in. And then it's just extra if you can do more. And the next week, if you can't get all 5 days in, cool. You got your two in. Amazing. And then you just see that progress over time. And then seasons of your life where time kind of opens up, you can go all in. And seasons of your life where things get crazy, you just cut back to like those two times a week. And you just kind of play like that. Like, during hunting season, I do not work out nearly as much. I'm running a business. I have my kids. I have actual hunting season. So my workouts generally cut back to like 3 days a week, when normally I like to work out 5 to 6 times per week. Right now I'm working out 5 or 6 days per week. So it just depends. Again, holidays too, around the the hunting season as well. So you have all these things playing a role. You can just cut back then. But if you build this habit, then it's going to be something you're just going to try to work in. Because that's the other thing a lot of people view themselves as. It's, you have to have an identity shift. Like if you identify yourself as, I'm lazy, I'm fat, I'm not fit. Like those are other people, but that's not me. You're always going to be telling yourself that. And even if you start working out, your brain's going to fight your identity because it's going to be, well, we're a fat, lazy person. We don't do that. So your brain starts to fight you with that subconsciously. And we have to have the shift to identity. So with my clients, I can say this is your you 2.0. Like visualize that person you want to be. That in shape dad who can go and do a Colorado elk hunt at the drop of a dime. That's your goal. The in shape mom, the setting a great example for her kids. If that's you, you have to visualize that person and then start visualizing what does that version of you do on a day to day basis. It's probably not cutting out old carbs, probably not working out 6 days per week. It's probably just trying to do what you can while still spending time with your kids and your family and doing your hobbies as well. So it's a visualization exercise you need to do.
If you're looking to simplify your food plot system while enhancing the quality of your soil, you need to check out Vitalize Seed Company. Vitalize provides top quality seed blends designed to fit into their 1-2 planting system. The system has been designed to allow highly diverse plant species to grow synergistically, optimizing nutrient uptake and cycling the way God intended. Reduce your inputs, build your soil, and maximize the quality tonnage for the wildlife in your area. Find out more about this system and get your seed at vitalizeseed.com. And be sure to check them out on Instagram and Facebook. You brought up a good point earlier in this conversation. So you brought up, you know, the ideology of seeing somebody on social media who is just an absolute beast. And you brought up Cameron Haynes, which I think Everybody in the hunting world goes to Cameron Haynes because he is one of the most determined, like, motivational individuals in the hunting space that there is. And hats off to him. But he's I don't want to call him an extremist, but man, he's close. I mean, he's close if he's not an extremist, right? And, you know, that's motivating. But then you put yourself into the shoes of the average bow hunter, the average just general outdoorsman. And, of course, you might get like a dopamine hit watching something like that and getting inspired to do that. And staging things out, though, that are realistic and measurable to like achieve goals, like that's got to be really tough. So tell me a little bit about like how you break things down with clients when you get into a situation like let's just say for example, man, I wanted to just take my bow hunting this year in Pennsylvania to the extreme. I was going to be running mountains like crazy, and I just got this outside of my mind idea of what I'm going to be achieving. You know, first of all, that's got to be hard on you to really understand, you know, what this person's capable of in the beginning. But, you know, setting realistic goals and then monitoring how you achieve those goals or like the step process, because it's so hard to see results sometimes, or people don't know how. Dive into that. I'm rambling at this point.
Yeah. So, yeah, Cameron Haynes is an outlier. I would never put someone on that kind of program. Also, most people don't want to live the life he lives, where he wakes up at like 3:30 a.m. and then like to get his runs in. But so back to your point with the goals, we need to set a SMART goal. So that's an acronym. It needs to be specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and then time-based. So when we're setting goals, so let's say right now we're trying to get ready for September or October for an archery hunt, and you're going to be running all over mountains. So more like probably like if we're talking whitetail, we're talking October. Okay, cool. So we have we're almost in June now. So you have about 4-ish months to get ready. So we have a time base. We have the T. We have 4 months to get ready. Then we have to set a SMART goal. Like what can actually be achieved in the next 4 months if you're starting from ground zero? Where I can tell you right now, if you go all in, like I'm going to run every day, I'm going to lift every day, you're going to get hurt, you're going to get burnt out, and probably you're going to destroy your immune system. You're going to be sick half the time. So when we start out lifting or with any exercise, we need to make sure we can recover from that. So if you're super sore, probably doing a little too much or just something new. So probably 3 days a week at most, maybe 4 days a week. Measurable. What does running all over the mountains look like? I have in my mind what that looks like. That's probably going to be 8 to 10 miles a day. But for someone else, that might just be 3 miles. For someone, it might be like, I need to do this. I'm going to, you know, I listen to way too much Joe Rogan and I'm pulling a 90-pound bow and this other person's pulling a 50-pound bow. So it's having like a measurable goal of these are the things I need to be able to do come October for the running all over the mountains for my archery hunt. How do I get from here to there? That was SM. A is attainable. So again, just setting a realistic expectation that in 4 months, you're probably not going to become a marathon runner, but you can make drastic improvements. And then it might not be this year, but the following year, the following season, you might be in the actual prime shape you want to be. It might not be this year if you're starting right now. And then relevant means it's actually relevant to like whatever goal you're setting. Like I'm going to do keto and I'm going to do like lift every day and I'm going to do all these other things. But is that relevant to your life? Like if you do keto, you're never going out to dinner with your family. You're never going to be celebrating holidays from now until then with your family. Like you can't eat that food. If you're lifting every single day, but some days that means you're not going to be able to sit down with your family and that's important. Is that actually relevant to your goal? Or is that taking away from this, you know, that you 2.0 version of yourself? Like, hey, I'm an amazing dad who I hunt. I set a great example. If you're skipping dinner to go work out, is that really setting that example for your kids? You can answer. Like, I can't tell you whether that's a yes or no answer. You have to decide that for yourself. For me, that's a hard no. No, we sit down every night and have dinner as a family. So that's how you kind of set that goal is you figure out what you need to do. We have that time and then figure out how we're going to get there. And then that's the big goal. And then we break it down to smaller goals. Like every like 4 to 6 weeks, you're going to set like little mini goals. So that would be like first, like 4 weeks, we're going to work out 2 times per week. And then we're going to bump it to 3 times per week and then 4 times per week. And then it's like, okay, cool. I just made amazing improvements all along the way instead of like the big, hairy, scary goal of like, great, I set this goal. Where do I start?
Where do you think a lot of people fall off the boat, so to speak, when you're going through stuff? Is it a lot of the time because they don't set set a timeline or a process that is achievable, like you said? Or is it a lot of times, sometimes it's just mental blockades? Like, where do you see that lag for so many people when they're trying to achieve a goal? You know, let's just say it's revolved around being in better shape to be a better hunter or whatever that case might be.
Unrealistic expectations. Everyone overestimates what they can do in 30 days and underestimates what they can do in the next year. So everyone's chasing like, I want to transform my life in the next 30 to 90 days. It's always like 30 to 90 days. I want to completely revamp everything. But if you actually expanded the time horizon, so like with my clients, minimum commitment to work with me is 6 months. Because for one habit, we're talking just like one habit, it takes 3 weeks to actually have that set in. And usually we're talking multiple habits. We have to break some bad habits we have, like maybe it's emotional eating. Maybe it's running to alcohol as a stress coping mechanism, poor sleep habits. We're already battling, say, lack of exercise. So just one habit takes 3 weeks. So if you're trying to like overhaul your life in 90 days, you're going to be trying to break all these habits and start all these new ones. And that can be very overwhelming. So I always try to like do like one or two things at a time with clients. Like these are your main focuses right now. Like, these like two things. It might be like get 8 hours sleep per night and get 10,000 steps per day. Or maybe it's eat protein at every single meal, eat a veggie at every single meal. Like it's just like those things for the next 3 weeks. That's your focus. And if you do that over a year, in a year from now, you're going to be like a totally different person. Like you will be that person you're trying to do in like 90 days. It's just going to take longer. So that's where people get, they lose sight. And also like in like the middle, usually about week 6 to 8, people tend to fall off because motivation, it's super fickle. Like it's here one day, it's gone the next. It's going to burn out in about 4 weeks. Like if you're just like motivated to make a change right now and you don't have like a goal and you don't have some way to keep you accountable, you're going to fall off in about 6 to 8 weeks because that motivation is going to just go out. And if you think back of how many diets and workout programs you try in the past, probably been about that long. And all of a sudden it's like something pops up in that 6 to 8 time frame. And then you like, okay, well, when I get back from this work trip, I'm going to get back on track. Or like, I'm done. I'm going to take a week break. And then you never, that week break turns into 6 months. So, you need some accountability partner. This might be your partner. Personally, I think it's a terrible idea. My wife and I'm a coach and I refuse to coach my wife. not smart. My wife works with my assistant coach. She does not work with me. Partners tend to be really bad accountability partners. And so the reason for that is generally as a partner, your wife, even if like you're the head of household, like it's kind of a 50-50 relationship. When you're in like a coach client relationship, the coach is ahead.
Yeah.
Like up here, the client's down here a little bit because they're like a student. So like teacher student relationship. When you do that with your spouse, well, hope you don't want to have sex for the next like 90 days. Just say like you're gonna butt heads and you're gonna hurt feelings, so it's better just to, like, give someone else that, and they're like, oh my god, honey, they told me to do this, and you're like, I've been saying that for the past weeks.
Right.
But it's a different kind of relationship. So this is where like a coworker or a friend can be a really good accountability partner. Obviously I'm a coaches are accountability source of accountability, but you can also find some coworker or friend to do it where you have a good relationship. But I'd never recommend that friend who they want to go out to happy hour every single week. Like, don't get that friend as your accountability buddy. Get the one who like they want to make a change, and you'll be like, hey, why the hell did you go out and on happy hour? Oh man, I screwed up. Cool. Why don't you not do that this upcoming week? And they'll do the same for you. Hey, I saw your Instagram post. Why were you there? Oh, crap, you caught me.
I like that too. And I think what we're kind of bouncing around a little bit too is the mental side of things, the mental toughness. Yeah. And mental toughness is not something that is easily taught. I don't even know if it is taught, but I mean, mental toughness is a big part of this. I mean, what thoughts do you have on the mental strength conditioning when it comes to making changes for the betterment of your physical life?
So it's worded mental toughness. You're about to, if you're actually chasing that, you're about to do a whole bunch of woo-woo stuff that is not going to seem very mentally tough. So I'm super like analytical, sciencey. Welcome to like the yoga, like let's break out our crystals and like light up the sage and stuff. That kind of stuff is what you're going to have to do a little bit, not too much, but you have to figure out what is the barrier holding you back from your goal. Like this can be journaling where, so a lot of guys, especially myself included, like, oh, I'm going to like write a diary. Like screw that. I'm not doing that. It's if you view more like a brain dump, like take all the information in your brain and dump it on paper. So a great exercise is like set a timer for 20 minutes. Don't let the pen stop writing. And whatever comes to your mind, it's going to come out on that paper. And that can give you insight of like kind of the deeper stuff that's going on with self-sabotage. And you might also get like some other great ideas like, wait, this solved my food plot problem for this year. I don't know why I never thought of that till now. So it's also a good exercise for a lot of things, but brain dump can be really good. Meditation can be really good. Kind of have to figure out that self-sabotage. So generally those are the two things I like people to do. And I'll fight with someone for a while and finally they'll do it and get screenshots. It's like 8 pages long of stuff they did with like their brain dump. They're like, I figured it out. Like, cool. And one day you did, you just had to sit down for 20 minutes in a quiet spot, set a timer and just start writing. And a lot of businesses do this, like a lot of like successful CEOs, they will do this stuff. So it's not like, oh, this is what hippie people do. This is, like a lot of people do it, who are very, very successful. I do it. I also do like power listing where like we're listing out the things that have to get done each day. And then it's developed over time. Like it's not a light switch. Like you're not going to magically turn on and be like, I'm mentally tough one day, or I'm like, I have tons of resilience. It's developed over time. And one big way to do that is through exercise. We have data to show that as you exercise, you do hard things. Exercise is hard. Like I'm not going to like sugarcoat that and be like, hey, we're going to go and do bicep curls and it's super fun. Like, no, it's still hard. You might enjoy it. You might not, but it's hard. And when we do hard things, we build up resilience. We go and do something we don't like, but we get rewarded for it later. That builds up that resilience over time. And so slowly you develop it. It's not going to be a month. It's going to be 6 months. It's going to be a year. But if you can start now and start doing that, you're going to slowly build up that mental toughness to where then you can take on more and more difficult things. Hopefully that answered your question.
No, it absolutely did. And I think, again, it comes back to baby steps and things that are achievable. So, no, I like that. We've been talking a lot about, like, being in a situation where maybe you're just in a funk or in a tough spot in life and you need to make some changes that are tough if you want to not go down a certain road. But let's take a different avenue to this, Chris. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hunting in a lot of cases can be a very physical and mental game. And, you know, if you want to better yourself and you want to put miles on, hunt in tough locations, tough situations, or, you know, maybe it's just a stamina thing in order to connect on maybe a very, very high-end goal. So, you know, from your hunting experience alone, what are some of the things that you have found that really take your hunting stamina, shooting capabilities, whatever, to a next level in your hunt, like things that you wouldn't have thought of before, but now that you're working on this and using this in your daily routine, hey, this helps me be a better bow hunter or be a better whatever hunter.
So I've added more cardio to my routine for like if I do go black bear hunting, or if, you know, I do have to drag a deer out from a place like you can't get anything in. So cardio definitely helps, but also doing like once or twice a week, that high intensity interval training, that's going to help train your nervous system for when you get the buck fever, which we all know. The heart rate, the adrenaline spike, your heart rate through the roof, you get that tunnel vision, and that's where a lot of people mess up. So there's no perfect way to train that. However, when we do interval training, so getting that heart rate up high for a short amount of time and then fully recovering, not the stuff that Orange Theory does. That's not true interval training. We're talking like, we're going to go 30 seconds on, like 60 seconds off of say like some, like a sprint or kettlebell swings or just some sort of exercise like that. You do that. That's going to, every time you do that, your adrenaline spikes, your heart rate goes way up and then you like come down. I know a couple guys will do that and then they'll go and take like one shot with their bow. So don't start with that. You will miss and it will cost you some arrows. But once you get a couple of weeks under your belt, you can go, if you can, obviously everyone's situation is different. You can go and do just that of, I'm going to do 30 seconds of a super intense exercise. I'm going to take one shot at 20 yards and then rest and then do the same thing and same thing. And then you're going to build up to a little bit of fatigue and then also, just training your body to better handle that adrenaline dump when you get it.
Mm. Yeah, that's a big one because I'm sure you were probably caught off guard the first time you experienced it and experienced that adrenaline dump. And that's one of those things, you know, I've hunted my entire life. And I just listened to a Joe Rogan podcast. I don't listen to a lot of those, but I was really interested in the guest. He had Joel Turner on. Joel Turner, you know, Shot IQ. Really fascinating guy. Really fascinating episode. I listened to it twice, and you know, talking about the mental side of things and dealing with that adrenaline dump and how to execute that. So there's you know, he was talking a lot about the mental side of things, but there's definitely a physical attribute and being in a physical state that's better than, you know, at your peak performance, I guess, so to speak, is going to be able to execute something like that better if you're at a moderate level of brain capacity and an adrenaline dump, I guess.
Yeah. So I've seen a lot of guys do different stuff, but yeah, when you get that adrenaline dump, like your brain starts to shut down. That heart rate's spiking up. So if you can condition your body to handle that, you're going to be better able to focus and make better decisions under that high stress situation, because it's a high stress situation for your body. It caught me really off guard the first time it ever hit me. I'm like, what is this? I've never experienced that ever. So now I just know and expect, but even every year, like you kind of forget over the year, and then like come like I can start hunting in September, October, like, oh, that's what that feeling is again. Oh crap. But I can manage it pretty well. But the other than getting out in the field and experiencing it, which you can't do year round, you can do it through some sort of physical exercise. The other thing that's really good for hunters, especially if you have to carry out anything, or just carrying your gear, is going to be weighted carries in the gym. So if you've ever watched strongman competitions, you see them do like the farmer carries and stuff. It's exactly that. It's going to be like doing farmer carries, suitcase carries, goblet carries, just like holding weight in different position and just walking with it. Kind of what rucking does, but you can go much, much heavier. And that's going to train your body to better handle like after the hunt happens. Like, how do I drag this deer out? Or pack it out if you're going at elk hunting, or how do I drag this bear out? Maybe it's like you and a few guys, and you're like, how are we going to get out of this drainage so we can get it like maybe onto a vehicle or something? Like, how's that going to happen? That's a good way to train the body to move under load. And you can get like, you can do like body weight each hand. Like a good goal is like half your body weight in each hand, but you can keep going up. You know, high levels, like for farmer care, like your body weight in each hand. But for men, like a good starting goal would be half. Like if you're 200 pounds, 100 pounds per hand, and walk like 50 yards with that. So it's like 25 yards down, 25 yards back if you have the room, or you can go multiple. But that's an amazing exercise.
Mm. Good stuff. Another thing that's gotten extremely popular, and it's a very cool thing, you know, we've talked about a bunch, is public land hunting, running and gunning, you know, mobile hunting setups. And, you know, with mobile hunting setups, you know, a lot of the guys that do it, you know, have different maybe stick, saddle, stick, tree stand setups. Maybe the guy's still running climbers and stuff. But when it comes to climbing trees, setting up a setup like that, you know, we've talked a bunch about how to do it quietly and stuff like that, but there's definitely a stealth stamina side to things that comes into a physical attribute. Mm-hmm. I remember the first couple times I hung tree stands, hang on tree stands in the summertime, I couldn't believe the physical toll that it took on me. I wasn't used to it. Now I'm very used to it, and I think I do it fairly efficiently, but you know, timeliness and quietness and stealthiness is really important to that. So, I mean, when that comes to your mind, you know, how do you incorporate that in for somebody like a whitetail hunter as far as off-season preparation?
So that would be lots and lots of rucking. That's going to help. That's going to help with the endurance of like getting in there. Because if you're taking, say, like a climber in, that's going to be strapped probably to your back. Actually, 2 years ago when I was at up at bear camp, there's a guy who he brought a climber in. It was like straight up the mountain. He was dying. He made it, but he was dying to get up there. So it was, you know, that's going to be anywhere between 25 and 50 pounds. Plus you have your weapon, plus you have water, probably food, and, you know, whatever other equipment you're taking in, you can kind of weigh that stuff out and figure out, okay, I need to walk around with about this much weight on. I usually don't recommend more than 50 pounds because injury starts to spike at that point. But if you can work up to like moving around with rucking workouts of like 30 to 45 minutes with 40 to 50 pounds on, you're going to be in pretty good shape to get in quick. Cause there's going to be a balance. Anyone who's been out of breath knows this. You can't hunt when you're like, you're totally exhausted. So you can't sprint in because if opportunity presents itself, you're not going to be able to take a steady shot. So you have to, move at like a quick pace that's quiet, but not so fast that you're going to be absolutely exhausted and take like 10 minutes to actually come down in case like an opportunity presents itself. So that's going to be around like your what's called zone two cardio, which is about 65 to 70% of your max heart rate, which is kind of what you're training during those rucking workouts. So it's training your body under load to move with endurance. And it's also training your heart rate in the zone you want to be in, where you can focus, you can still be stealthy, you're not getting fatigue, but you can actually like take that into the field and then translate that to like getting in. And then once you're in, having that endurance, like now we actually have to get up the tree. That's half the battle. So having good, I haven't yet to use a climber, but it's kind of like a full body exercise. So doing resistance training is going to help there. Any endurance training will help. But doing resistance training is going to help you be able to move quickly and quietly, because the more fatigue you get, the more your fine motor skills start to go down. And that's where you start to get noisy. So any level of endurance and any level of strength is going to help you with that. And the more strength you have, so strength works on like a percent basis. So if you're able to move, say, 50 pounds, and it's 25 pounds, that's 50% of your strength. So the lower you can move, like whatever that climber is down the strength curve, the less toll that's going to take on your body. So, not saying you need to like bench press 300 pounds, but if you can just improve your strength at all, that's going to be so much easier to do this season. Hopefully that answers that question.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Again, I keep just going back in my line. I think so many people would say this is like the, again, back to the time aspect. I mean, if I take off, let's just say I take off a couple days in bear season, a couple days the first week of firearm season, and I'm going to be, you know, I live in the southern half of the state. I go up north to the big woods, and I'm putting, you know, I know bear season, it's nothing to put on somewhere in the you know, realm of 15 to 20 miles and in 2 days, heavy mountains, you know, thick cover, this and that. And it's just all day long. Go, go, yep. Go. And this, and it's extreme environment sometimes. And, my mind, and this is just my simple mind, the way I go, I just think there's no way to prepare for that that's realistic, because it's an all-day extreme event, and I don't have the timeline in my I can't take one day a week and go do, you know, just devote to that preparation. But a lot of people have told me that's the wrong ways. And can you elaborate on what your thought is? Like, how does the workouts you're talking about, or the little things you can do throughout the, actually, it does build up stamina over a long enough time.
Yeah. So specifically when I'm talking like the rucking and zone two workouts, one of the adaptations we're creating is helping your body utilize oxygen better. So when, you know, how's 45 minute rucking workout going to help you when you're spending 12 hours hunting from like, you know, before sunrise to like basically sunset when you have to pack up and exit the mountain. So how's that going to help you? Well, you are training your body to better utilize oxygen the whole time. And that's not just like an on-off switch during your workout. That's going to carry you through the rest of your life, including like outside the mountain as well when you're not hunting. But that's going to help you there. Any strength you build is going to help you, so you're not going to fatigue as fast. Are you going to be tired? Oh yeah, you're going to be tired. You're going to be tired. You're going to be beat up. You're going to come back sore. There's absolutely no way, unless you are able to hike every single weekend and do 8 to 10 miles every single weekend. I used to before I had kids. I can no longer do that. Mm-hmm. That's a great way to get in shape, guys, if hiking is a good way, but not realistic for everyone. So just doing anything is going to help at least a little bit. Even if it's like twice a week, 15 minute workouts, if we're improving our heart's capacity to pump blood and utilize oxygen, and we're increasing strength, then when you go to the mountain, it's not going to be as bad as last season. And the other thing to think about is when it comes to physical fitness, there's no like pause button. The pause button is actually like staying active. So every year we're actually like losing muscle mass, we're losing endurance, we're losing strength. So the only way to stop that, so that if last season sucked, well, it's going to be even worse this upcoming year, unless you get active. So if you become active, you start walking more, working out, stuff like that, we can at least press that pause button or start to make improvements. And then you're going to notice that, like, oh, like, last year I got tired like 3 miles in. This year was 5 miles in. There's still 10 miles. Like, maybe there's another 10 miles, but you got an additional 2 miles. Well, that's awesome. Maybe you just need more recovery. You also learn the limits of your body as well when you're exercising. Like, for a lot of guys, if you're not working out, you have no idea what your limits are until you actually test it. When you're working out, you actually know kind of like, hey, these are my limits. I really start to go downhill at this point. Like, it really gets difficult for me at 45 minutes. You kind of know, like, hey, I'm going to hike in and we're going to go 3 miles in, but I know I'm going to need rest. So we're going to like chill out at this point. Scan, say, I'm thinking like my black bear hunts. This is kind of how I would do it. I would like sit down, like, here's the point. I know if I go any further, I'm going to fatigue. I'm going to chill out. And then if nothing happens, I'm going to move to this point, say an hour later. I give my body an hour's time to recover. I'm going to move over here. Then we're going to spend time over there. And if nothing happens, and depending on the wind, we're going to move to over here. And you can kind of map that out on X. But if you don't know your body's limit, you're kind of like, I don't know. Maybe it's 5 miles. Maybe it's 2 miles. I don't know.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So, wild game being such an awesome, awesome thing. What suggestions do you have for people who are on the go constantly to utilize wild game in a way that is not so time consuming, but is just fantastic? I mean, what comes to your mind as far as, you know, that utilization?
For recipes, my go-to thing is either throw it in the slow cooker. That's like the go-to. The other thing you can do is something called sous vide. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of that, but
I'm not familiar with it.
Okay. So super fancy word. Basically, it's put it in the bag. So if you already have it in like the vacuum seal bags, it's already done for you. You put it in the bag, and put in warm water, and it just like cooks it to the exact temperature you want. So it's literally what I did with the venison tonight. And you can throw it in frozen. That's the other thing. Like, you can have that stuff ready to go, throw it in frozen. You can buy the machine, or if you have an instant pot, you can do it on most instant pots. If you have a custom temp thing, you just fill it up with water, set it to whatever temp. Like, I like my stuff rare. So it's usually like 125, 130 I cook it to. Put that in, let it sit in there for a few hours. So if you have work, you might put that in frozen in the morning, set the delay, and then when the delay goes off, you can time it out with your work. You might be walking into the door with that already done. Cool, you can take that out. So you just look online, like size of the meat and et cetera. And there's also like, because the water is the exact temperature you want, you have to leave it in for a while to like overcook it. It's also essentially slow cooking. So if you get like a big, tough, ruddy buck, it actually helps break down some of that connective tissue in there. So it's going to tenderize it as well. So slow cooker or sous vide, those are my two things for you need dinners that you're going to, you can set in the morning and then come home to. And it's super quick. When it comes to like lunches, we use a ton of ground. We'll do venison burgers, venison meatballs, and kind of meal prep all that stuff for the week. Taco meat. And then, for snacks, you can do jerky. We don't do a ton of jerky. We usually only do jerky for any extra we get, which we didn't get any extra this year. But that's one way people use it for snacks. We don't do a ton with that. But if you guys are using, venison, like ground venison, and you're trying to watch your weight, if you process it yourself, try to make it lean. So I put mine at like a 93.7 when I processed it myself. A lot of butchers are going to put like 80.20, which makes an amazing burger. Don't get me wrong. Amazing, delicious burger, but the calories are really high. So if you're like, oh, Chris said like use my ground meat. If it's 80.20, there's going to be a lot of fat. You're going to want to cook off most of that fat. I try to just do mine super, super lean. Not 100% lean, but lean enough to where I'm not destroying the calories. Mm. And if I want like some like gourmet burgers, I might do a separate thing where I'm going to add extra fat to, say, 10 pounds of venison. We're going to do that. That's going to be for like the summer cook-off barbecues and stuff like that. but for our day-to-day stuff, it's going to be leaner.
Like that, like that. All right, here's your opportunity. I kind of want your open-ended thought process when it comes to social media. There's a ton of, I shouldn't say a ton, but there's definitely reels, pictures, channels that are devoted to helping people with fitness, and it might be specifically devoted to hunters, but there's also a lot of infomercial business that comes into that, right? So I'm kind of curious where, somebody like me who's clueless to a lot of stuff, where do you navigate the fallacy versus the facts and stuff like that? And when you go through that, I would love for you to dive into, you know, somebody who's doing the research and, you know, good old Apple Androids got their algorithms to know, you know, how what you're looking at and try to put pop-ups there. So, you know, that can bombard people. So I really want your opinion. Like, how do what do you see out there right now online that's just BS versus good information? You know, good information, obviously, follow Chris Heskett, right? But let's go outside of Chris Heskett, right?
Yeah. Okay, so if we're looking at accounts, I know, like, the coaches I'm friends with, the really good coaches, we're not gatekeeping anything. Like, if you ask me, like, hey, what are my macros? Like, how to set my macros, like my protein, carbs, and fat? I'll help you out. I will, like, give free information out there. Like, if you look at most of my reels, it's, like, free actual information. About half of them are, like, actionable. Like, you could take action today with that information. If someone's just posting, like, they're a fitness coach, and they're, we always call it with my, like, group of friends, like, the ass and abs pics, where it's going to be just chicks. It's going to be, like, okay, like, they're just showing their butts in every picture. Or guys are just, like, shirtless all the time. There's a handful in the hunting community. Might not be the best coach. They might just be in it kind of like to get money. They got a huge following and now they can sell like a crappy like cookie cutter program. And you like log on. The other thing is like, if it's too good to be true, like I'm going to do this person's program. It's $19.99 for a custom program. It is absolutely not, custom. There's no way. So that's something to look out for. Anyone who's just not actually giving information out. Again, the best coaches right now that I know, they're just giving out good free information. Cause honestly, like you can, anything I talk about, you could Google for free and find good information. If you want to learn like the workout programs I put together for clients, you could learn it all through Google. The nutrition programs I put, you can learn it all through Google. Where I help as a coach is like navigating some of that BS out there in the industry. And just keeping you laser focused and not getting shiny object syndrome. Like, oh, I listened to the Andrew Huberman podcast and I'm going to do ice baths and red light therapy every single day. Like, cool, bro. You're not even eating vegetables, three times a day. You're getting maybe just dinner. Maybe we should focus on just that right now. That stuff's not going to help you. Like, oh yeah, that makes sense. So that's who to look out for. If they're gatekeeping information, they're just not providing actual value. It's just like pictures of like, hey, do this, or they're just trying to sell stuff constantly. That's a red flag. They're usually like massive followings and they're just like playing the revolving door game of, I'm going to get clients in. I'm going to get clients out. And every month I'm just going to grow my following and try to get new, fresh clients in who buy my stuff. And then they're going to leave and I don't care because there's so many people coming. Versus like, I want to like make sure everyone comes into my program, has a great experience, reaches their goal, and then graduates from the program with the skills they need to like never get back in the situation that they were where they were unhappy or unhealthy in their body.
Yeah, it's real important. Well, hey, this has been a very different episode for us, but I feel it's important because there's a lot of us out there. You know, I've got friends, family that do a great job keeping after things and keeping after their physical shape. And I hunt with them and go, man, like I need to do better with that. And taking that initiative, sometimes all the motivation you need is just to hear somebody like yourself saying it's not that hard if you take the right steps. So, Chris, I really appreciate you coming on, sharing your knowledge. Anything you want to leave us with, and definitely plug your following for people to follow along with what you're doing.
Yeah, I'll leave. So we talked a lot about fitness. I'm going to dive into nutrition to leave just I'm going to do two things. One is nutrition, and it's not that difficult. So nutrition is going to be where you get most of your results, especially if you're looking for improving your health and losing weight. So where I start a lot of people is just eat more protein, which if you're eating wild game, eat more, and then eat veggies. Cut back on the processed stuff. We can dive into keto and carnivore and vegan and all these different things. Hunting podcast, nobody's vegan probably. But there's all these different conflicting things. Most people know what to eat. Just start eating more of that stuff. Don't try to cut that out. Eat more potatoes. Eat more venison. Eat more chicken. Eat more veggies. Don't try to like shrink those down and then snack on more stuff. So that's where I'll leave that out. And then for people just starting out, all my clients, we start phase one of our program called Base Camp. I like to paint the picture like you're climbing a mountain towards your goal at the top of the mountain. So there's four core habits. We call these the core four. So to get results, you need to do these things. And this is always where we fall back on if like life gets crazy. So it's going to be protein at each meal. It's going to be aiming for 7 to 9 hours of sleep per night, or trying to get a total of 49 hours of sleep in a week. It's going to be drink about half your body weight in ounces of water per day. And then it's going to be getting some sort of daily movement in, having like a step goal of like 7 to 10,000 steps per day, trying to get a workout in here or there. But some sort of movement goal. It doesn't need to be resistance training. It doesn't need to be working out. It can just be like, I'm going to walk my dog twice a day now, and we're going to go, we usually do a mile, we're going to do 1.5 miles.
Good deal. Like it. Hey, for people to follow along there, where can they catch up with you?
Yeah, so I'm going to be on Instagram and TikTok at Chris_PWC. I have a Facebook community, so that's going to be Peak Weight Loss Secrets. You can join that. That's a free community. And then my podcast is called Wild Nutritions. Wild Nutrition Podcast.
Yeah, where can they find your podcast? Same places you'd find a lot of podcasts?
Yep, Spotify, Apple, Amazon Podcasts, iHeartRadio, pretty much everywhere.
Good deal. How'd you get into the podcast side of things?
I have been listening to podcasts for years, so it was just like, I listen to podcasts all the time, why don't I start my own? And then I like the long-form content. Like, you can't talk about what we talked about tonight in like a 60-second read. Or even a 90-second reel. So it's just a better way to communicate and then get, you know, offer a platform to other people. Like, you offered your platform to me. I do with other people as well. Like, hey, come on. You'll speak to my audience. And maybe the message I've been sending to people hasn't resonated. And then all of a sudden another coach comes on. That's how I found many people I follow in my life from other podcasts. Like, okay, so I want to offer this other opportunity to the world. I'll bring other coaches in. I'll bring other experts in. We'll talk about stuff. And hopefully that message can get out and help other people.
Absolutely love it. Hey, again, thank you. Good luck with everything you got going on. And hopefully everything preparation leads to good fall for you this year.
Thank you, Mitchell.